Hi, this is Greg Corumbus. Jim Garrity and I are both on vacation this week. We'll be back on June 25th, and Thursday and Friday of this week, there will be new episodes with guest hosts. But for today, please enjoy this best of episode of the Three Martini Lunch.
Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. All of it brought to you by Casper Mattresses, now with their special Memorial Day offer for a limited time. Visit casper.com/savings and receive 10% off your order with any mattress purchase. This special offer expires May 29th, 2018. Terms and conditions apply. Much more on that a little bit later in the podcast. Jim, let's start with our good martini. And it was a few months ago now, I guess, where we were very impressed that President Trump did what every previous president, I think from Bill Clinton through Barack Obama, admitted, which was that Jerusalem was the capital of Israel, but they all found reasons not to actually move the U.S. embassy there or to treat Jerusalem like the capital of Israel. Trump said, that's ridiculous. That's our policy. We're going to move the embassy there. Today, the embassy was moved. Trump addressed the gathering by video. Jared Kushner gave an address to the gathering there. So did the U.S. ambassador to Israel. And the theme seemed to be that if there's going to be peace in the Middle East, we've got to recognize reality. And the reality is that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. It doesn't mean there's not going to be a lot of trouble in the near and distant future, as we'll talk about in our third martini today, Jim. But recognizing reality is a good thing. We'll make that a good martini.
You have to say, look, if keeping our embassy in Tel Aviv was going to help create peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians, you figure it would have happened by now, wouldn't you, Greg?
Right.
We've established this proud bipartisan tradition of promising to move the embassy and then not doing so in fears that it would agitate the Palestinians. And that has gotten us where we are. And it doesn't really seem to be doing much good to pretend that Jerusalem is not really the capital of Israel. For the sake of Middle East politics, but also I think for American politics, that when a politician says, I will do X, then it is good to do X. And we can debate the merits of X. We can debate whether X is wise or whether it's provocative. But this tradition we had established through the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, and to a certain extent through Obama. Obama never explicitly said that he was going to move the embassy, but he kept saying, Jerusalem is the undivided capital of Israel now and forever. And they say, so does that mean you're going to move to Israel? Oh, heck no. Heck no. We're not going to do that. And if every U.S. embassy is in the capital city of every other foreign country, but not in this one, it sends a signal that we don't really do this. Now, one of the great ironies, of course, is that this is really, in terms of the workload, fairly minor. They are changing the signs on the consulate that has been in Jerusalem for a very long time. The embassy, I assume the ambassador is going to start working out of there. It's not a terribly long distance between the two cities. And now apparently the Israelis are ready to name the traffic circle that is nearest to the embassy U.S. Square in honor of President Trump. And I'm sure that just makes him giddy with enthusiasm. The Israelis are very happy about this. We'll talk a little bit more about the Palestinian reaction. But, promises made, promises kept. And that's a good thing to see. I think this is a general principle. Even if I didn't support the original policy, which I do think there's a little bit of concern about terrorism. I think it's pretty obvious that Hamas, Hezbollah, and every anti-American, anti-Israel group on the planet is going to want to, try to hit that building. The Israelis have a pretty darn good record in terms of fighting terrorism and preventing attacks. I imagine the security around that building is going to be off the charts, and maybe it's going to have to be that way. But I do believe that eventually, as has been widely said, acknowledging reality is probably it's better to do this than to have the Palestinians forever hoping that there's going to be some sort of scenario in which they end up controlling Jerusalem, which is, not going to come to pass. So again, I would raise my glass to that for a longstanding bipartisan passed Congress back in 1995 by a wide margin policy finally come to fruition today, Greg.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done. Well done. All right. On to the bad martini now. And Jim, this is from Fox News. And this is happening in a state where we wouldn't necessarily expect it. Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon on Friday vetoed the constitutional carry bill that, if passed, would have enabled handgun owners in the state to carry without first obtaining a permit. The NRA had supported the bill's passage and had urged Fallon to sign it. She did explain her decision. She says, Oklahoma is a state that respects the Second Amendment. As governor, I've signed both concealed carry and open carry legislation. I support the right to bear arms and own a pistol, a rifle, and a shotgun. Oklahomans believe that law-abiding individuals should be able to defend themselves. I believe the firearms requirement we currently have in state law are few and reasonable. Senate Bill 1212 eliminates the training requirements for persons carrying a firearm in Oklahoma. It reduces the level of the background check necessary to carry a gun. Now, when this went through the legislature, it passed the House 59-28. It passed the Senate 33-9. So it's very possible this veto could get overridden, Jim. But you don't expect a Second Amendment stumbling block from the Republican governor of Oklahoma.
When I was in Dallas about a week or two ago, Greg, I remember hearing somebody at the NRA official discussing this and saying, boy, we could use a win right about now. We've all seen the overwhelming deluge of criticism that came at the NRA after the Parkland shooting. We saw Florida change its laws to raise its age to purchase a firearm to 21. Quite a few states are considering red flag legislation. Not every member of the NRA opposes that. I think most people feel like as long as it's a carefully constructed law, that yes, you can intervene in a case where you think someone is a threat to themselves or a threat to others, but they are worried about it being written a little too broadly and being used to seize guns, if not willy-nilly, then not under very specific circumstances. This is a little bit of a surprise and a little bit of a disappointment. The argument behind constitutional carry is that when people say you should have a permit to own a gun, people say, well, wait a second. I thought the Second Amendment was my permit. The right of a free people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And, many states have open carry, many states have concealed carry. But the argument of constitutional carry is, you know what? The government really should not be in the business of telling you you can't own a gun unless they have some good reason to, i.e. a criminal record or mental disability or something like that. Again, I think the NRA wanted to see a win here. They felt like they had a decent chance having a win here. Mary Fallon was generally supportive of gun rights, but vetoed one or two pieces of legislation in the past the NRA had supported. I think that makes this ominous is the sense of whether this Parkland atmosphere has changed. And look, if the Republican governor of Oklahoma is wary about signing a law like this, that I think would not have had a really sweeping change in the gun laws. And again, this is Oklahoma. This is a heavily Republican state. This was, passed both houses by fairly wide margins. Disappointing day for the NRA and for gun owners in Oklahoma. It's not going to make a sweeping change of this veto. And as you mentioned, it could very well end up being a overridden legislatively. The fact that she didn't immediately sign it was a bad sign. And now things have shaken out as the NRA was fearing during that long delay.
I don't know why people, Republican politicians in particular, fear, especially in a place like Oklahoma, not that she's up for re-election anyway, she's finishing her second term. But the idea that being more moderate on guns is good for you as a Republican, if anybody shows up at the polls, Jim, it's pro-Second Amendment people.
The only explanation is this is what she genuinely thinks. I do think it's because you mentioned she's not up for re-election. And, would she have had taken this stance when she was running for re-election close to 4 years ago? I think it's, fair to wonder if this is a case of lawmakers getting a certain strange new respect, as they say. And if not drifting left, then not necessarily holding up to their image that they wanted to have back when they wanted the votes of all gun owners, Second Amendment advocates, and groups like that. It's amazing what views people have once they no longer have to face re-election. I guess they can sleep easier, huh, Greg?
Yes, they can. I was going to say, it's a long buildup to the 2018 midterm, so get your rest now. And right now, Three Martini Lunch listeners are invited to take advantage of Casper's competitive, limited-time Memorial Day sale offer. Casper sells directly to you, which means they eliminate the added cost from the middleman, and that saves you money. You can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night, risk-free, sleep-on-it trial. And returns are hassle-free if you're not completely satisfied.
Casper has three mattress lines to choose from. The original Casper, the innovative Wave, and the Streamlined Essential. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with the right amount of sink and bounce. The Wave features a patent-pending premium support system to mirror the natural contours and shapes of your body, and the Essential has a streamlined design at a price that will not keep you up at night.
The breathable design of each mattress helps keep you cool and regulates your body temperature throughout the night. And so now for a limited time, you can visit casper.com/savings and receive 10% off your order with any mattress purchase. This special offer expires May 29th, 2018, and terms and conditions do apply. That's casper.com/savings to receive 10% off when you order before May 29th. All right, Jim, let's move on to our crazy martini now, and it'd be less crazy if this didn't happen every time there was a flare-up of violence between the Israelis and Palestinians in the Middle East. So I'm not sure it's crazy that this is the norm, I guess, is the best way to put this. But the mainstream media, of course, pretending that, once again, Israel trying to block a horde of Hamas extremists from crossing the border and, I don't know, attacking the embassy, creating some sort of mischief. It's somehow really mean of Israel to stop them from doing that. So this is Ian Lee in three separate bites. Ian Lee is a correspondent for CNN, and he's right there on the Gaza-Israel border.
We have a drone right here. This drone is likely, there you go, you can see the tear gas that's falling down. It's falling down into the camp, and this has created that chaos that I was talking about.
Yes, the tear gas is creating the chaos. Here's more.
These are people who have been trying to actually push closer to the border down there, that fence. And they've been gathering here, the tens of thousands of people at camps like this one, all up and down the border. And just down there, you can see possibly those dirt mounds. That's where the fence is. And that's where these people say that they want to try to cross that fence. Now, Israel says that they're just not going to allow that to happen. And you get incidents where you do have them tear gassing the protesters, trying to push them back, trying to disperse them, also using live ammunition.
And one more.
And then just south of our position, we heard what sounded like heavy artillery. And then in the north, we saw at least two airstrikes with Israeli military saying they're going after five Hamas positions. So that just kind of sums up the atmosphere of this deadly day when you have just tens of thousands of people with one goal in mind, try to cross that border, and then you have the Israelis saying they're not going to allow that to happen. You know, Kate, this is one of the bloody days. Tomorrow we're expecting a similar sort of protest.
Jim, so it's just protesters. They just want to cross the border, and those really mean Israelis won't let them cross. Darn it.
It's just like the American, the terrible wall that President Trump wants to build. For those, kind of a quick primer on this. So the Palestinians are divided into two territories. The first is the West Bank, which, you know, as we're looking at a map, despite being called the West Bank, I guess it's of the Jordan River, it is on the east side of a chunk of Israel, includes places like Bethlehem. You may have known, heard of some guy who was born there, Ramallah, Nablus, and all that stuff. Then you have this other portion, separate from it all, called the Gaza Strip. And despite what Vox.com might tell you, no, there is no bridge that actually connects the two. The Gaza Strip is arguably one of the most miserable places on earth. It elected Hamas to run itself in 2007. And this probably should be a lesson to you. Don't count on good social services from Hamas, despite the fact that every now and then you hear them described as a social organization. Apparently, you get a lot of credit if you run a widows and orphans fund, even if you're in the business of creating widows and orphans. So Gaza basically is incredibly impoverished, low rates of employment. The water isn't clean on the Mediterranean Sea, but they have no desalinization. They have no sewage treatment plants. Apparently, the whole thing is filthy. Basically, there's one border with Egypt, and then the rest of it borders by Israel. And of course, there's enormous security fences there. Now, as I mentioned, it may not surprise you that Hamas runs the place terribly, spending a lot more money and resources on rockets that they launch into Israel, hoping it hits something valuable, often not succeeding, and not spending it on, you know, desalinization plants, sewage plants, things you could actually do to improve the lives of the Palestinian people. And so somebody decided earlier this year, what would happen if a whole bunch of us just walked towards the border with Israel and tried to enter? If there were thousands and thousands of us, what would happen? Well, I think most of us would say, well, the Israelis would try to shoot you because they don't want you coming across the border. We can argue about whether that policy is just or unjust, but none of us should be the least bit surprised that that's what Israel does. They've stated this openly. They've said, basically, if you're armed, come within 300 yards of our border, we're shooting you. If you're unarmed and you come within 100 yards of our border, meters, we're using metric over there, 100 meters of the border, we're going to shoot you. They have dropped leaflets saying, don't come near our border. And people are still doing this. The idea, and of course, apparently this came from a young activist separate from Hamas, but this hasn't stopped Hamas from jumping on board and saying this is, you know, they fully support this. This is mass suicide. This is basically not all that different from Jim Jones from the Branch of Davidians. This is basically taking your people and putting them in a situation where they know there's an extremely high chance they're going to get killed. And the idea, I guess, is because Hamas has failed in every other conceivable purpose it has in its existence of helping the Palestinian people, and of course it has failed in winning conflicts with Israel. This is the card they have left. We will attempt to generate world sympathy for our cause by provoking the Israelis into a disproportionate response. Now, for the Israelis, disproportionate response is the sort of thing they have stitched on a throat pillow. They're perfectly fine with that. That is their exact stated policy. Don't come near our borders, we'll shoot you. And yes, is this probably going to get them denounced at the United Nations? Sure. My guess is Nikki Haley's going to be doing a lot of vetoing lately in the next couple of weeks. Our European capital is going to be shocked and horrified and denounce it? Yes, of course. But Israelis get denounced 20 times before breakfast. I don't see why Hamas would think this is going to significantly change things. You know, bad publicity frightened Israel. They wouldn't get out of bed in the morning, and they will do whatever they feel is necessary to protect their borders, period. And they don't care what the you know, international media does. Having said that, it does seem rather galling as the coverage keeps dismissing it as if it's some sort of like, you know, calm activist operation. When you try to jump the fence at the White House, somebody tries to get you. If you try to go walk into Area 51, you can run into people who will, you know, grab you, throw you across the border, and remind you that it doesn't exist. You know, we're not allowed to come into certain places. People will respond. Obviously, many Palestinians feel more motivated to do this in response to the U.S. moving the embassy. But again, I don't really understand why the Palestinians would expect this to change. And you know, the old saying is that Palestinians never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. Well, in this circumstance, they're banging their head against the wall. And hoping that something will change. And there's really no reason to think that this sort of action will generate any significant change between Israel and Palestine.
Yeah, not much changing there, Jim, but something could change as a result of a new Supreme Court decision as we exit for today. Supreme Court now allowing other states, in particular New Jersey, but I assume it applies to the other 48 states too, besides Nevada, which already had legalized sports betting. Legalized sports betting across the board could be on the way, depending on what states decide to do here. This could make us filthy rich if we bet on Jets and Bears games, but usually probably for them not to cover.
Betting against them, yes. Look, if anything professional athletics needed, it's have more money involved, right? Great news for Pete Rose, huh? And or Michael Jordan, if you believe the rumors. Yes. Sure, he just decided to play baseball for 2 years. Totally wasn't in lieu of a suspension.
Well, there goes more people's incomes and perhaps quite a bit of a hit for Nevada. They kind of had a nice little monopoly for themselves there. So we'll see if it makes a difference.
Maybe Nevada will move on to like gladiatorial games or something like that. Turn us completely into Rome.
On that note, Jim, good start to the week. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget, right now, Casper.com/savings. Head there and receive 10% off your order with any mattress purchase. The special offer expires May 29th, 2018. Terms and conditions apply.